Hello and welcome to The Essential Reads. My name is Isaac and my goal is to bring to you a bunch of classic audiobooks in an easy and accessible way. And I'm getting progressively faster at doing this introduction. If you'd like to support the show, you can do all the YouTube-y things like comment, subscribe, share, all the podcasty things, share, review, etc. Or if you really want to support me in a more personal way, you can go to the Patreon where you'll have access to exclusive audiobooks there for as little as €1, $1, whatever your currency is, a month. So if that sounds like your thing and you want to help support me bring audiobooks to the masses, go there. We're continuing with Huckleberry Finn by Mark Twain, and let's dive in. Huckleberry Finn by Mark Twain, chapter 37. That was all fixed. So then we went away, and we went to the rubbish pile in the backyard where they keep the old boots and rags and pieces of bottles and wore-out tin things and such trucks, and scratched around and found an old tin washpan and stopped up the holes as well as we could to bait the pie in, and took it down cellar and stole it full of flour, and started for breakfast and found a couple of shingle nails that Tom said would be handy for a prisoner to scrabble his name and sorrows on the dungeon walls with, and dropped one of them in Aunt Sally's apron, which was hanging on a chain, and t'other we stuck in the band of Uncle Silas's hat, which was in the bureau, because we heard the children say their pa and ma was going to run away house this morning. And then went to breakfast, and Tom dropped the pewter spoon in Uncle Silas's coat pocket, and Aunt Sally wasn't come yet, so we had to wait a little while. And when she come, she was hot and red and cross, and couldn't hardly wait for the blessing. And then she went to sluicing out coffee with one hand, and cracking the handiest child's head with the thimble with the other, and says, "I've hunted high, and I've hunted low, and it does beat me what has become of your other shirt." My heart fell down amongst my lungs and livers and things, and a hard piece of corn crust started down my throat after it, and got met on the road with a cough, and was shot across the table, and took one of the children in the eye and curled him up like a fishing worm, and let a cry out of him the size of a war whoop. And Tom, he turned kind of blue around the gills, and it all amounted to a considerable state of things for about a quarter of a minute, or as much as that, and I would have sold out for half a price if there was a bidder. But after that, we was all right again. It was the sudden surprise of it that knocked us so cold. Uncle Silas, he says,
"I'm most uncommon curious. I can't understand it. I know perfectly well I took it off, because..."
"Because you ain't got but one on. Just listen to the man. I know you took it off. I know it a better way than your wood-gathering memory, too, because it was on the clothesline yesterday. I see it there myself. But it's gone. That's the long and short of it. And you'll just have to change to a red flannel one till I can get the time to make a new one. It'll be the third I made in 2 years. It just keeps a body on the jump to keep you in shirts. Whatever you manage to do with them, more than I can make out. And body think you'd learn to take some care of them at your time in life."
"I know it, Sally. I do try all I can, but it oughtn't to be altogether my fault, because you know I don't see them, nor have nothing to do with them except when they's on me. And I don't believe I've ever lost one of them off of me."
"Well, it ain't your fault if you haven't, Silas. You'd have done it if you could, I reckon. And the shirt ain't all that's gone, nuther. And there's a spoon gone. And that ain't all. There was 10, and now there's only 9. The calf got the shirt, I reckon. The calf never took the spoon, that's certain."
"Why, what else is gone, Sally?"
"The 6 candles gone, that's what. The rats could have got the candles, and I reckon they did. I wonder they don't walk off the whole place the way you're always going to stop up their holes and don't do it. And if they weren't fools, they'd sleep in your hair, Silas. You'd never found it out. But you can't lay the spoon on the rats, and that I know."
"Well, Sally, I'm in fault, and I acknowledge it. I've been remiss, but I won't let tomorrow go by without stopping up them holes."
"Oh, I won't hurry. Next year will do. Matilda Angelina Aramita Phelps?"
Whack comes down the thimble, and the child snatches her claws out of the sugar bowl without fooling around any. Just then, the nigger woman steps onto the passage and says,
"Missus, there's a sheet gone." "A sheet gone? Well, for land's sake!"
"I'll stop up them holes today,"
says Uncle Silas, looking sorrowful.
"Oh, do shut up! Suppose the rats took off with the sheet? Where's it gone, Lizzie?" "Glad to goodness, I ain't notion, Miss Sally. She was on the clothesline yesterday, but she done gone. She ain't there no more now." I reckon the world is coming to an end. I never see a beat of it in all my born days. A shirt, a sheet, a spoon, and 6 can.
Missing comes a young little wench. There's a brass candlestick missing.
Clear out here, you hussy. I'll take a skillet to you.
Well, she was a violin. I began to lay for a chance. I reckon I would sneak out and go for the woods to the weather moderated. She kept a raging right along, running her insurrections all by herself, and everybody else mighty meek and quiet. And at last, Uncle Silas, looking kind of foolish, fishes up that spoon out of his pocket. She stopped, with her mouth open and her hands up. And as for me, I wished I was in Jerusalem or somewheres. But not long, because she said,
"It's just as I expected. So you had it in your pocket the whole time, and like you, you've got no other things in there, too. How'd it get in there?"
"I really don't know, Sally,"
he says, kind of apologizing.
"Oh, you know I would tell. I was studying over my text next 17 before breakfast, and I reckon I put it in there, not noticing. I mean, to put my testament in. It must be so, because my testament ain't in it. But I'll go and see. If the testament is where I had it, I'll know I didn't put it in. And that'll show I had it there. And that'll show I laid the testament down, took the spoon.
Oh, for land's sake, give a body rest. Go along now. The old kitten billing of you. And don't come near me again till I got back my peace of mind."
I'd have heard her if she said it to herself, let alone speaking it out. And I'd have got up and obeyed her if I'd been dead. As we was passing through the sitting room, the old man took up his hat, and a shingle nail fell on the floor. He just merely picked it up and laid it on the mantel shelf, and never said nothing, and went out. Tom see him do it, and remembered the spoon, and says, "Well, it ain't no use to send things by him no more. He ain't reliable." Then he says, "But he done us a good turn with the spoon anyways, without knowing it. And so we'll go and do him one, without him knowing it. Stop up his rat holes." There was a noble good lot of them down cellar, and it took us a whole hour, but we done the job right and good and ship shape. And then we heard steps on the stairs, and blowed out a light and hid. And here comes the old man with a candle in one hand, and a bundle of stuff in the other, looking as absent-minded as year before last. He went a moon around, first to one rat hole, and then another, till he'd been to all of them. Then he stood about 5 minutes, picking tallow drip off his candle and thinking. And then he turns off slow and dreamy towards the stairs, saying,
"Well, for the life of me, I can't remember when I done it. I could show it now that I weren't to blame on account of the rats. But never mind, let it go. I reckon it wouldn't do no good."
And so he went on, mumbling upstairs. And then we left. He was a mighty nice old man, and always is. Tom was a good deal bothered about what to do for a spoon, but he said we got to have it. So he took a think. When he had ciphered it out, he told me how we was to do. Then we waited and waited round the spoon basket till we see Aunt Sally coming. Then Tom went to counting the spoons and laying them out to one side, and I slid one of them up my sleeve, and Tom says, "Why, Aunt Sally, there ain't but 9 spoons yet." She says,
"Go along to your plate and don't bother me. I know better. I count them myself."
"Well, I count them twice, Annie, and I can't make but 9. She looked out of all patience, but of course she come to count. Anybody would.
"I declare to gracious, there ain't but 9,
she says.
"Why, what in the world? Play, take the things, count them again."
So I slipped back the one I had, and when she got done counting, she says,
"Hang the troublesome rub, the 10 now."
And she looked huffy and bothered both. But Tom says, "Why, Annie, I don't think there's 10.
"You numbskull, didn't you see me count 'em?"
"I know, but
well, I'll count 'em again."
So I smooched one, and they come out 9, same as the other time. Well, she was in a tearing way, just trembling all over, and was so mad. But she counted and counted till she got that addled. She'd start to counting in the basket for a spoon, sometimes. And so, 3 times they'd come out right, and 3 times they'd come out wrong. Then she grabbed at the basket and slammed across the house and knocked the cat galley west. And she said, "Clear out and let her have some peace. And if we come bothering around her again betwixt that and dinner, she'd skin us." So we had the old spoon and dropped her in her apron pocket whilst we was giving out our sailing orders. And Jim got it all right along with her shingle nail, before noon. We was very well satisfied with this business, and Tom allowed it was worth twice the trouble it took, because he said now she couldn't ever count them spoons twice alike again to save her life, and wouldn't believe she counted them right if she did. And said that after she'd about counted her head off for the next 3 days, he judged she'd give it up and offer to kill anybody that wanted her to ever count them any more. So he put the sheets back on the line that night and stole one out of her closet and kept putting it back and stealing it again for a couple of days, so she didn't know how many sheets she had anymore. And she didn't care and weren't going to bully Ray the rest of her soul about it and wouldn't count them again not to save her life. She'd rather die first. So we was all right now, asked the shirt and the sheet and the spoon and the candles by the help of the calf and rats and mixed up counting. And as to the candlestick, it weren't no consequence. It would blow over by and by. But that pie was a job. We had no end trouble with that pie. We fixed it up away down in the woods and cooked it there till we got done at last, very satisfactory too. And not all in one day. We had to use up 3 washpans of flour before we got through. I got burnt pretty much all over in places, and eyes out with the smoke. Because, you see, we didn't want nothing but a crust, and we couldn't prop it up right. She would always cave in. But, of course, we thought of the right way at last, which was to cook the ladder, too, in the pie. So then we lay in with Jim the second night, and tore up the sheet and all little strings, and twist them together. And long before daylight, we had a lovely rope you could have hung a person with. We let on it took 9 months to make. And in the forenoon, we took it down to the woods, but it wouldn't go in the pie. Being made of a whole sheet that way, there was enough rope for 40 pies, if we'd wanted them, and plenty left over for a soup, a sausage, or anything you choose. We could have had a whole dinner. But we didn't need it. All we needed was just enough for the pie, so we threw the rest away. We didn't cook none of the pies in the washpan, afraid the solder would melt. But Uncle Silas, he had a noble brass warming pan, which he thought considerable of, because it belonged to one of his ancestors, with a long wooden handle that come over from England with William the Conqueror and the Mayflower, one of them early ships, and was hid away in the garret with a lot of other old pots and things that were valuable, not on account of being any account, because they weren't, but on account of them being relics, you know. And we snaked her out private, and took her down there. But she failed on the first pie, because we didn't know how. But she come up smiling on the last one. We took and lined her with dough and set her in the coals and loaded her up with rag rope and put on a dough roof and shut down the lid and put hot embers on top and stood off 5 foot with a long handle, cool and comfortable. And in 15 minutes, she turned out a pie that was a satisfaction to look at. But the person that ate her would want to fetch a couple of kegs of toothpicks along, for if that rope ladder wouldn't cramp him down to business, I don't know nothing what I'm talking about, and lay him in enough stomachache to last him till next time, too. Nat didn't look when we put the witch pie in Jim's pan, and we put 3 tin plates in the bottom of the pan, under the vittles, so that Jim got everything all right. And as soon as he was by himself, he busted into that pie, and he hid the rope ladder inside of his straw tick, and scratched some marks on a tin pan, and threw it out of the window hole.
Thank you so very much for listening. If you enjoyed, please like, comment, share, that jazz, and if you really enjoyed, do subscribe because there's more to come. And if you're listening on podcast, please share, review, all those wonderful things. And if you really want to support the show, join me on Patreon, where you have access to exclusive audiobooks that you'll only find there for as little as $1 a month. Once again, thank you very much for listening, and until next time, bye-bye.